You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
It certainly is that time. I was up bright and early to chat with the Green Party today. Speaking with co-leader James Shaw, we had a discussion about the land in Taranaki that has been put up for tender for coal and gas exploration, and also the Welfare Working Group's report. Here is James.
So Ngāti Runui are disappointed some of their land will be offered up for onshore mining by the government. What has the Green Party done to try and stop this?
Well, there's a few things. We managed to limit the coverage. So if you look at the block offer 2017, the release area was over 500,000 square kilometres. This time it's only 2,000 square kilometres. We've got sort of new conditions that require permit holders explicitly to engage with iwi about any activities that could occur in areas that are important to them. The area that's covered specifically does not include places like Parihakapā, Mount Taranaki, the Pauakai, Pukaiti, Kaitaki Ranges. You know, these are areas of importance to Māori. There's also areas that are being investigated by the local councils there and local iwi regarding possible wahitapu sites. Those are also off limits. So, you know, we've been pretty clear about this. We would prefer not to be doing onshore gas exploration. We tried to include that last year when we got the offshore exploration ban, but we couldn't get that over the line. So what we have done is managed to restrict it severely and make sure that iwi interests are being taken care of to the maximum extent possible.
Did you feel there has been enough consultation with iwi in the process?
Well, there was consultation with iwi and hapū in the area, but you know, clearly the local iwi don't feel that was adequate. You know, I would just say that we need to keep making best efforts.
So yeah, obviously for the Green Party, the ideal situation would be no onshore mining. How, looking to the future, are you going to try and stop more of this happening?
Well, one of the things that we did get when we did the offshore oil and gas exploration ban last year was an agreement to review the onshore within the next few years. So the reasoning at the time for allowing onshore exploration to continue was that there is actually some question about gas reserves and our ability to transition to fully renewable in the time that we've got gas available, and there just wasn't good advice or good science available to us to be able to make that clear. So I'm hoping that we'll have much better science and advice when that review rolls around, so that we could say, yeah, look, we can actually make a call on it.
And this is something, I suppose, the Green Party, this is what you stand against. You're fundamentally an environmental party, really. Are you worried that allowing this sort of thing to happen could get a bit of a backlash from your members?
Yes, always. But ultimately, you know, when you're part of a government and you're only a support party in that government, then you have to accept that you win some and you lose some, you know, and in fact, no party, even the major party, you know, the Labour Party, doesn't get everything it wants, as illustrated recently with the capital gains tax decision. And that's just a function of coalition governments.
Well, I suppose you've had quite a few losses recently. Are you worried that these are kind of mounting to a point that the members are going to be really quite angry?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I think, I mean, so, you know, obviously I travel around the country and I talk to our members and our voters quite a lot. And for the most part, people, you know, are really delighted that we're in government and that we're also getting significant gains. And you have to look at this in the round, you know, that there is a sort of a balance between, you know, all of those things, all of those, you know, if you want to describe them as wins and losses. And generally, the people who I speak to feel like we're doing a good job, that for the most part we're doing what we, you know, that we're kind of you know, getting the wins, so to speak. And yeah, people are disappointed by some of those decisions, but it's better to be in government than not, because it means that we're able to do things that you just could never do from opposition.
I suppose, I mean, you say it is better being in government than not, but at what point do you say, well, we're compromising our principles so much that is it really better than we're in government?
Well, that's a really tough call to make, because, you know, there are decisions occurring every single week here that we're involved in. And so I guess I would have to look at our confidence in supply agreement and to say, if we felt that that was being compromised, if we weren't able to deliver on our confidence in supply agreement, then you'd have to question, you know, that was a sort of almost a contract that was drawn up that said, you know, in return for supporting the government on confidence and supply, these are the areas that we're going to see some progress on. And actually, when you look at the confidence and supply agreement, we're doing really well. So, and in fact, we're over delivering against some of those measures. So I think on balance, we're a long, long way away from any question about whether or not it would be worth staying in government or not. I just think, you know, the losses, as you call them, get quite a lot of publicity. The wins don't get quite so much. So we have to spend quite a lot of our time when we're talking to members and supporters, kind of letting them know what's going on. But, you know, like I said, on a weekly basis, you know, we're getting traction. So, yeah.
And moving on, a long-awaited working group into the welfare system has called for a systemic overhaul of the welfare system. This is sort of hardly what we got in the response from the government. What are your thoughts on, I suppose, the report itself and the government's response to it?
Yeah, I mean, we were really pleased with the report, and it sort of largely echoes what we had been saying before the election about the state that things have fallen into over the course of the last 30 years or so. So it kind of confirmed our suspicions, if you like, and I think gave government a pretty clear steer about what we needed to do with that. The release on Friday, you know, there was a bit of publicity over the weekend saying only three of the recommendations were being accepted. That's true at the moment, but there is a, you know, there will be kind of more to come in the future. Now, partially that's because when we got the report, budget bids had already closed in the budget process, and so we have been kind of fairly late in the budget process trying to you know, jig things around to be able to at least get started on those recommendations. And the three recommendations that we are acting on immediately are the ones that were at the top of our list when we were campaigning in the last election. So that, I think, is really good news, that we're actually finally able to deliver on things that were at the top of our priority list, in particular this piece around sanctions applying to women who didn't name the father of their child, with, you know, losing their benefit or part of their benefit. And that's frankly outrageous. So it's good that we've finally got rid of that.
I suppose that is a fairly easy change to make. It's sort of something most people can say, yes, this is unfair. How do you feel about sanctions still remaining within the welfare system, though? Is there any place for them?
Well, this was, you know, what the report said is that for the most part, there was very little justification or evidence that supported those sanctions, and very little reason to continue them, because the evidence suggests that they actually just don't work, and all they do is make people poorer. So, you know, those are things that we need to look at for the future.
Is this something you're going to be agitating for?
You bet.
And further to this, they recommended that the benefit be raised 47%. It's a sort of catch up with the cost of living. The government is not going to do this, and it doesn't look like they're going to be doing it in the future. Are you disappointed by this?
Well, I mean, we're going to be advocating for rises in next year's budget and beyond, because people are living below the poverty line. And you know, I mean, the report was very clear about that, and that's frankly unacceptable. So we're going to keep pushing pretty hard on that.
And these are, I suppose, these initial three recommendations the government's implementing and possible further ones. How are these actually going to help those on the benefit if it's just not enough to live on, let alone raise a child on?
Well, all of them have a benefit. And, you know, when you combine them with some of the other things that we've done in government, such as the mini budget straight after the election at the end of 2017, where we put an additional $500 million into the system, and further rises in last year's, or, you know, further support through things like the winter energy payments and those kinds of things. You know, everything that we are doing is making life better for people who are in those circumstances. Now, you know, I support all of those changes. We do want to go further. The report gives us a really clear steer about how to do that, and we'll be advocating for that in the future.
I suppose overall, are you disappointed with the government's response? Would you like to see more of an endorsement of some other recommendations? Do you think they've been a bit cautious?
I would like us to move further, faster. I always have. But I've got to say that, you know, I was listening to another radio report this morning talking about a new opinion survey saying, you know, people feel that we should be paying teachers more and that we should spend more on health and education. You know, we've also got this welfare working group report that suggests, you know, very significant increases are necessary and important. And at the same time, people are saying, oh, well, we don't want a capital gains tax. So, you know, it's kind of well and good to say, yes, we support increased spending in these areas that are important to us. But the revenue, you know, people also need to get on board with the idea that that's going to mean increasing revenue.
But I suppose, I mean, there is a surplus at the moment. And the sort of the books that were just released the other week. What's the point in having these surpluses if the government's not going to spend it in these vital areas?
Well, the size of the surpluses doesn't even begin to cover what the welfare working or you know, that some of the changes that have been mooted for health or education. And they've got to happen every single year. And of course, you know, your surplus kind of fluctuates year after year. So
you think it's better to sit on it than spend it?
No, I don't. I think that it's inefficient to have massive surpluses, particularly, as I have said before, when you've got people living in cars and garages. Mm. But my point is that the overall size of the changes that you know, are being wanted do call for an increase in revenue above and beyond any kind of surplus that we're able to run.
And I suppose you did say people were saying they didn't really want capital gains tax. Do you think that's true? Do you think the majority of the public was against it? Or this was just Labor and New Zealand First trying to justify not implementing one?
No, there were a number of different polls that were conducted. There was only one. There were different ways of doing capital gains tax. There was one model which involved putting a capital gains tax on investment properties only, and that was the unanimous recommendation of the tax working group, but then offsetting that with income tax cuts at the bottom end of the spectrum. So, you know, people would, you know, that kind of lower income tax band would be a bit lighter for people. And that was a revenue neutral model. And people looked at that and said, oh, yep, that, you know, that did get a majority of support in polling. And that would have helped to correct the unfairness of the existing system and helped to make it more progressive, but it wouldn't have raised any more revenue for the government to be able to put towards things like the benefit changes or increased spending on health or education. So at some point, you know, if New Zealanders really want the outcomes that they say that they want, they're going to have to talk about what that means in terms of increasing revenue.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.